Hello again, everyone. I'm Tony. This is Ange. We both run the Back to the Future the Musicals fans Facebook groups and social media accounts. Our Facebook group has over 4,300 members. We're also posting to Instagram and Twitter, and you can find all our past interviews on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, and all your other popular podcasting platforms. We know this one is going to be one that our Facebook members are really excited about. Our guest today, probably best known for playing Asbestos Guy in Back to the Future the Musical. He's our Dave McFly and alternate Marty. It's Will Haswell.
Hi, team. How are you? Okay. All good.
Yes, all good. Thanks for giving up some time to chat with us today. How have you been keeping?
Yeah, you know, all good. I must say thank you so much for that lovely introduction. I am best known for Asbestos Guy, or you could say Colin de Hat, Doc Extraordinaire, number four to the right. You could go with that one as well. So I think that's what people best know me for. But, you know, no, I'm all good. I'm really good. So thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure, Will. We always like to start these interviews. We like to know what your journey to Hill Valley was like, what your career has been like. So we'll focus the interview on Back to the Future, but it's always interesting to know where it all began for you. Lindsay in our group was very interested to know where it all started for you and if you always wanted to be an actor.
So I was obsessed with sport as a kid. I still am to this day. Like, I liked rugby, football, cricket, you name it, NFL, like, you name it, I enjoy it. So as a kid, I was sport mad. But then in the summer, like summer holidays, like 6 weeks holidays and stuff, we'd have like sports camps, little mini things. But certain things weren't, like rugby, kind of difficult in the summer because the ground's so hard and all that kind of stuff. So basically, I got sent to a dance and drama summer school thing, and it was basically my old dance school. And it was for a week at a time. And we would effectively do little dance routines, little shows. At the end, we'd show. So it was like Monday to Friday. And on the Friday, we'd show our parents what we'd done. And the themes of the shows that we did were all based around like the Disney films. So it was like 1 week it was Hercules, 1 week it was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, then it was Mary Poppins, then it was, you know, there's just, the list goes on. So my mum signed me and my sister up for one when I was a kid, because I got quite bored in the summer and she thought, you know, he needs to be active, go there. And I really enjoyed it. So I kind of did that through primary school, going into high school and stuff. And then I got to high school and it got to an age where I couldn't go to the summer school anymore because I was too old, but I really enjoyed it. So my dance, the principal of the dance school, Debbie, kind of said, well, if you want to carry on singing, because I'd always liked singing, I had an interest in it. They're like, you're going to need like ballet and tap. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And I tried ballet and thought it was all right. Did jazz and thought it was all right. And then I did tap and it was something I could do really loud and not get shouted at. So I kind of stuck with it. And then once I decided that I wanted to stick with it, I was doing the classes, doing ballet, tap, jazz, modern, all that kind of stuff. And we were really lucky. My old dance school, every summer they go down to Devon, which is where our principal's from. And they have like a festival arts week. And we would tour our dance show to different schools, theatres, areas in and around Devon doing it. So we got like the taste of that kind of thing. And then I got to about 14, 15. So it was my final year at high school, 15 years old, before just turning 16. And I found out that you could do this properly as a career. I was very lucky in the sense that my parents loved going to the theatre when we were kids. And it was a real, kind of privilege to go and see all these shows as a kid, because my mum and dad were very like, well, we're going to take you. Like, if we want to go and do something, you're going to come with us. You know, there's no point in you, unless it was something we can't go and see. So from a young age, we got taken, and we were lucky being in Essex. The train connections are quite lucky to get into London. And as I said, we were lucky to be able to go. So when I found out that it wasn't just something you could do as a hobby and you could do it as an actual career, I was like, give it a go. So I auditioned for college and then I got in. So I left home at, I just turned 16. Some people find it crazy, but I went straight into a house with two other boys in my year, like no landlady or nothing. I was a 16-year-old. I could just about wash my clothes. I used to take it home every now and again. It was so bad looking back at it now. So I did. And then I went to college. I did 3 years there. And then I was fortunate enough to leave a term early because I went straight into Mamma Mia. in London. And that was back in 2012, we started that. So that was 11 years ago now. But, you know, it's been great fun. I mean, look, as I've said to you guys at Stage Door so many times, the people that come, like, I have the best job in the world. I get to take people out of their world for a couple of hours and make them forget about everything that's going on and give them some escapism and put some clothes on, pretend to be somebody else, have a great time and have it as a job. You know, it really is remarkable. I love it. So, yeah.
Brilliant background. It's funny to see how many people get into this with like summer schools and after school clubs. Like Jordan was exactly the same when we spoke to him. Almost like forced to go to it
you know. And I think, like, for me, like, one of the big ones I haven't spoken about it, one of my first like memories were two of them, which is why for me one of them is my parents took me to see Mamma Mia originally when it was at the Prince Edward. So for me that was a real kind of enjoyable full circle moment for my mum and dad and me, in the sense that, and my sister, that my first professional job was Mamma Mia. And the first show that they took me to in the West End was Mamma Mia. So it was like, it was kind of cool for them. Like, mum and dad were sitting there watching their little lad be in a show that they took me to. Do you know what I mean? That was kind of weird. That was really cool. And something that I think is really important growing up for kids in general and for families and stuff is panto. I think it's so important, because at what better place than a panto is where I learn kind of how to behave in a theatre. You go, like, if you're spoken to, you reply. If you're not, you sit there and listen. You can join in, you can get told. So when you go to like a West End show, if no one directly speaks to the audience or speaks to you as a person and says, what do you think? You just enjoy the show. So I think it's really important. It's just so much, and pantos are great anyway. So, you know, I have fun.
Right. Yes, I agree. You mentioned you know, getting into Mamma Mia was your first job. Obviously you've done a lot since then. We've got a huge list that we won't go through because it'll take a while, but a great portfolio there. But we know that even with Back to the Future you were involved from very, very, very early on in the process. You were part of the workshops. You were Dave in the workshop presentation in like 2019.
Yeah.
Do you recall when you first heard about the Back to the Future musical? And can you tell us about how you got into that role and being part of the workshops?
So the first time I'd heard of it, it was in 2018, and I was on so there'd always been grumblings of it. We'd never heard of anything. Nothing was like concrete. There was something that supposedly was due to happen but then it wouldn't happen, or something maybe happened under the surface but nothing ever came to light of it. Do you know what I mean? And so I heard about it. I had an audition through and they said, oh, Back to the Future musical. I was like, oh, that'd be cool, that sounds fun. It's a thing that hopefully you hear of certain things and you go, kind of off the bat, you go, that's got legs, that might not. Do you know what I mean? So and workshops happen all the time. There is so much that happens without, it's like a week and done, and that's it. And you never hear of it again. So I got an audition through, and it wasn't for anything specific. It was just, could you please go into a room and sing a song of your own choice that can show off your range? And that was it. And I was like, okay, cool. So I remember going to the audition room, and it was David Grimrods, who's casting director, Nick, our wonderful musical supervisor, and I think John Rando was there, our formidable director. And I sang my song and had a little chinwag with him. And I was like, great, thank you so much. And then the funniest thing is a month went by and nothing happened. I heard nothing. Like, I literally heard nothing. And I was like, okay, well, you either take it as no news is good news, or you take it as, do you know what? I'm going to put that to bed. It's not gone my way. It's fine. And I was going into an audition, like a final round for something else. And as I was about to walk in and say, hello, I'm Will, I'm here for this, my agent rang. And he was like, hi, mate, you're all right? I was like, yeah, I'm about to go in. Have I got the wrong time or date? And he was like, oh, no, just a quick one. Back to the Future said they'd like you to do the workshop if you're interested. Starts in a couple of weeks. You want to do it? I was like, yeah, cool. And put the phone down. And then a couple of weeks later, I was in the world of Bob Gale, Back to the Future. And on the day, they were like, do you want to be Dave? I was like, yeah, let's go with that. Dave McFly. And our little family of McFlys was born.
So that was, you were offered the part for the show or for the workshop?
The workshop. So the workshop, because at this point, we nobody knew what was going to happen. So it could have effectively done, we don't think it would have, because it was great from day one. We were sitting there reading the script with the team, and we were doing the read-throughs, and we were listening to the stage directions and what they had visions for the show and all that kind of stuff. And we were going, this is surely got to go somewhere. It's surely got to happen. But so I just got offered the workshop. And then luckily enough, every time they went, yeah, you'll do. Do you want to come back? I was like, yeah, all right, please have me on. So yeah, I've literally been involved with it from day dot, really, as in workshop one. We had a 2-week workshop in the Dominion Theatre where Grease is. They've got a rehearsal space upstairs, and we did a 2-week workshop in there. We had original bits and pieces in it. There was stuff that I don't think ever got past the light of that rehearsal room. I think when you guys saw it in 2019 in the final, did you see the 2019 workshop or not? And you hadn't seen it, but it was wrong.
We know some people that were there, but yeah, we were. Yes.
So I'm pretty sure we might have had it there, but instead of originally cake was, it was like an 8-part chorus harmony of Sandman. And you look back at it now and go, it's so far from where it is. Like Sandman's still in it, like you hear it and stuff like that. But, you know, there's different things, like something about that boy at the end of Act One, we were just running around the room. We weren't even like, we were running out of doors and coming back in. And we did, like, it was a, and we had, we actually had, here's a little, I don't know if anyone said this before. We had a gentleman called, if you ever heard of Nick Colicos, and he was the most recent, let me get this right. I think he was Lance in Anne Juliet just before it finished. So he took over from David Padella, I believe. Yeah, that's right. Dave, yeah, he was. I think that's right. Yes. Anyway, so he was our voice for our stage directions. So when we were doing the presentation, so that everybody in the room got an idea of what the set, what everything looked like, we had Nick read our stage directions. So for example, it would get to that bit and it would be like, get him, a choreographed lunchroom chase scene, like that kind of thing. But the little bit of information is Nick is the first voice you hear on the radio in our show.
There we go.
So when he talks about the plutonium being done, they were like, we'd like him to be involved somewhere. So he's like, that's a piece of plutonium has been missing from our storehouse 2 weeks ago. That's Nick.
Amazing. Someone did ask about this recently in our, we've got a separate spoilers group for things to be discussed where it's like, you know, we don't want to spoil it for other people. And someone had asked, is that also Bob Gale? And everyone quickly jumped in and said, no, it's definitely not Bob Gale, but we don't know who it is.
Definitely not Bob.
I heard something about this workshop where there was also, I think, was it Aisha Joando, who was in a like a silver jacket or something, being the DeLorean at some point?
No, we had, it was a lady called Kelly Agbu. Kelly was, so she was the original voice of the DeLorean. So they were going around and it would be like, time for a guitar. And she'd just stand there with a red folder and go, time circuits on. And it was great. So yeah, it was really cool, like to see all the little snippets and stuff and all the different, you know, like, let's be real, like I remember, so I when they said to me like Dave McFly, I was like, yeah, cool, like let's give it a go. Dave doesn't have, like, he's in the film and he's part of it and he is part of the McFly family, but I was like, let's just flip it. Let's just go for, see what happens. I'll sing it. I'll try and rock it up a bit, see what they think. And he kind of just stuck, you know, like for the past 5 years, I've been asking people if they want fries with it and it's still going well. So do you know what I mean? Like it's fine. But like, what's a real like little golden piece of joy is Hello itself from day one to now literally hasn't changed. That's been that. Like, obviously this year, as you guys are aware, because you've seen the show and you saw it last year, saw it in Manchester, like Dave and Linda and bits have been like trimmed out to kind of condense it so we can move things along kind of thing, which I think has worked for the better. But, you know, Give Me Back My Print CD, You Want Fries With That, like all of that stuff and the stuff that's on the album, like all of that stuff. We did that around a piano on day two or three of the workshop. And that whole family unit has been, I mean, because Emma came into one of the workshops, I think she did one of the ones near the end, it was called The Lab, that I didn't do because I was actually on Grease for Colin, our producer. So I was still working with him, but I couldn't do that one. But from the Dominion, me, Hugh, Rosie and Ollie were all a family. So for 5 years that they were like my unit, you know, like they were like my McFly, you know, my families, you know. So to see it grow to how it has been and see everything else change around it. But there's something quite special about that scene staying the same, you know, like it's just kind of nice to it in a weird way, like it makes you just feel really proud, like to have been a small cog in this whole process, you know. And it was such a remarkable thing to be in rehearsals. Like I remember in the workshops and stuff, there was when as you guys remember, Ollie Ormson, who was, as we were originally the Goons, and there were bits where we'd go, oh, can we try this? And it was like, yeah, give it a go. You know, like half the ad-libs, we just used to say anything, throw something in and see if it sticks. And if it does, great. And if it doesn't, we get laughed at and we wouldn't do it again, you know? So I think that process in itself was just such a really, really cool, fun thing to do. And it's something that I'll never, ever, like that will never leave it with me, you know. There's a couple of things along this journey. I'm sure we'll speak about it in this interview, but you know, like there's certain things like along the way that will never, like the first, I'll never forget, this is going off on a tangent, but when we were in Manchester, we obviously did everything and we'd seen it for the first time. There's two things about Manchester that will stick with me forever. And one of them was a few of us had been in that workshop from day one. And as I said to you, that originally everything stage direction wise and what it looked like was read to us. So the first day that we saw Doc's Lab that wasn't in a red folder on a bit of paper was mental, like mental. You go, we've read about this for nearly 3.5 years and we're now seeing it in front of us, like it's mad. And the other one was, do you guys know what a six probe is? Sure you guys do. So yeah, so that, I'm sure people spoke about that, like that day where we all sat in this film hangar in the outskirts of Manchester and you hear the theme tune for the first time and you see all of us singing and you look over and Bob's got tears in his eyes because he doesn't know what's going on. And it's like, as Bob always says to everybody, you want to have Back to the Future 4. You just want to feel how you felt the first time you watched the first film. And that's what we do, you know, and it's just, yeah, there's been a lot of ticks along this job and I'm so thankful for it. It's been amazing.
I can imagine how you must have felt, because even just you describing the sits prob them, I've got like goosebumps on my neck, because I think there was even, maybe it was the Augury account, the production yeah. company that Glenn works with, I think they put some footage of this in their stories at some point. And yeah. I think the sits prob was one. And then also, I think where everyone was doing a very different version of Only Matter of Time. Around the piano. There's a couple of things you touched on there that I want to dig into a bit. Was this your first experience in creating something from scratch in this way? Or have you done that sort of thing before?
I'd done little bits of it before, like, but not on this scale. Like it was always a case of, I remember doing, a show and we were doing it and it had never been done before. The script had been just written, but it was to the magnitude of, it felt like it wasn't sure what it was. It was still, it felt like the show that we did, it felt like it needed another couple of workshops to then go to, like, excuse me, it felt like it jumped a couple of phases, you know. But that was when it was actually happening in a theatre. This probably, yeah, on paper, to the magnitude of what has happened to where it started from, where it's gone to now, this is something that is, it has been mad. Like, to think I'm still with it, it's been 5 years of my life, including COVID, where we did this, you know, we did The Power of Love for some people, and we did the whole thing with Josh Gad, and we all kept in contact, and, you know, so it's been a heck of a journey. I wouldn't change it for the world, like I wouldn't, you know. And in a weird way, it kind of feels like, look, COVID was horrendous. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted the world to stop. But I don't think we'd have what we'd have where we have it if it didn't happen. I think it would have got, I genuinely think it would have gone somewhere else, because the theatre we were due to be in was due to be taken. It was supposed to be another show there. So if another show's there, you can't just kick one out. Do you know what I mean? And you're not just going to turn around and go, right, tomorrow out, this one's coming in. I mean, effectively they could, but it's not very nice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and actually, you know, our group, I started the group after seeing the show in Manchester for the previews. And that group just continued to grow and grow and grow all through that period of COVID. And people were just so excited about it coming back that obviously that first show in the West End was just what people had been waiting for like 2 years. Well, since 2015, when they first heard that the show was going to be a thing.
I mean, I don't think I've ever experienced a crowd like it. It's quite remarkable. Like, it really is. And I just think the thing that everybody loves is that it's for everybody that watches it. Like, we have great fun doing it, but it's for the fans of the show. It's for the people that like musical theatre. But I think there's no better reward or, like, kind of, yeah, reward, really, just to see the acceptance that it's had. Because, you know, this show, this franchise is so beloved. It's a bit like the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Like, if they got that wrong, that has such a big following that, you know, Harry Potter, like Back to the Future, like they've all got these own worlds. And to have the acceptance of people that love the franchise and to love this world, to have that acceptance and they enjoy what we do so much, it's amazing. It really is.
And having Bob Gale, you mentioned getting thrown into the world of Bob Gale, obviously as one of the co-creators of the whole thing, and with him in his basement looking at his dad's yearbook. What was it like working with Bob Gale through those workshops? Obviously, he still keeps in touch.
Bob's great. Like, it's, do you know what? Like, I think if you go back to any of us that are starting out in this industry, like, we all have aspirations, we all have dreams and stuff like that, but if you go back to, like, 15-year-old me that's going to college, and you'd say in 10 years' time, when you're 25, you're going to be sat in a room on a workshop. You don't know what's going to happen, but you're going to be sat in a room with Bob Gale, Alan Silvestri, Glenn Ballard, John Rando, all of those people, meet some friends that you would never, ever lose touch with, and you're going to be doing Back to the Future, the musical. You'd go, what? Like, what are you talking about? But Bob's amazing. You know, like, he's just, his whole world is this. Like, his life and everything is this. But it's just, I've never met a man like him. Like, he comes in and he just lights up the room. He always says hello. He always checks in. Like, I don't think I've ever been on a job where you're checked in as much as you are. Not to make sure that you're doing your job properly, but, like, over the course of the year, like, I had COVID, like, twice. I had a couple of injuries and stuff. Every time I'm off, I get an email. Are you okay? Like, how? Just making sure you're all right. We want you to rest up. Make sure you get better. Come back to us soon. Do you know what I mean? And it's just, it really is one massive family, you know? And I think it's just, yeah, it's really cool. It's just so cool to be a part of it. And he's amazing. He really is.
Yeah, we agree.
Yeah.
Moving on a little bit, just interested, a couple of people had mentioned this, I think.
Yeah.
At what point did you find out that Dave McFly? I guess because you sort of organically got this role of Dave McFly. At what point did you know it was also understudy Marty?
So I got asked, I had to, so we all had to, when we were, knew we were going to like Manchester and stuff like that, I had to still audition for the gig. It wasn't like definitively yours. I was like, yeah, of course. Like, you know, as this process is, you want to make sure that they want to make sure that they've got all the people they want and et cetera, et cetera. So throughout the workshops, there'd been like one time if when Oles was doing it, I think he stepped out of the room and Nick was like, I've known Nick for years. He was like, just sing it for a minute. I was like, yeah, all right. So I did it and I was like, cool. And then I auditioned for that and I was like, yeah, cool, let's give it a go. And I went in and sung The Power of Love and they're like, great. And I was like, yeah, cool. And then it just kind of happened and I was like, oh, okay, cool. So before I went to Manchester, I knew that I was going to be like cover and I was like, yeah, great, you know. And then coming into London and getting to do the Monday nights, it's just been, yeah, I mean, it's mental to still think. I think it's that thing that I've mentioned it to a few people over the course of the years. Like, so I think within the world, including Michael, the man that is Marty McFly, I think there's like six or seven of us that have played Marty McFly to a paying audience. That's it, which is mad, which is it's bonkers to think it like that. Someone said it to me the other week. They were like, "Do you realise this?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's weird, you know." So yeah, it's.
You're definitely down in like the canon of Back to the Future. I know there's lots of theories on whether the musical's canon. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if it comes from Bob Gale, it's part of the official Back to the Future. Yeah. So you're one of the actual alternate Martys. So you found out that you're also understudying. I guess not everyone understands how theatre works. Jessica in our group was asking what the rehearsal process is like in learning lines and learning the role as an understudy.
Yeah, of course. So as an understudy in most jobs, so for me, if you get an understudy for a show, you are a port of call if the person that is playing the role that you are covering or understudying, if they are, due to unforeseen circumstances, cannot perform that night, you will then step up. Now, this could happen at any moment. So for example, I've had a show where I've done multiple shows where I've been thrown on halfway through. Someone's had to go off at with 5 minutes notice. You have to go on with literally, oh, they're off, you're on. Okay, cool. So, you know, so I always think as a cover, you have a responsibility that you do and you take that responsibility on and you acknowledge that responsibility. I think you can learn your lines and your lyrics as best you can, because they're the things that's in your control. You don't know the spacing. So in a rehearsal room, in a process like Back to the Future, when things were chopping and changing at the beginning, I would have to learn my own track as well as my cover. But I would always try and keep an eye on, say, what Marty was doing, where he was going. If bits have changed, you just jot it down. So you kind of have a bit of a leg up. But if you get thrown on last minute, there's a small expression called shove with love. So if you're in the wrong place, just a small hand on the back and a little guided shove over there. Okay, fine. You know, like I went on in Manchester for a couple of shows and we were still in preview, so we were doing it all. And I got asked, they were like, how do you feel about going on? And I was like, well, how long we got? And they were like, about 5 hours. I was like, yeah, all right. So I learned the show. I knew my lines, my lyrics. I knew the songs because I've been with it for so long and I knew it. But the blocking wise, it was like, right, start here, move there, go there, go there. Good. On you go. And you're like, okay, cool. And it's kind of like, you kind of thrive off the pressure sometimes, really. You're like, okay, this is cool. Like, let's see what happens, where it goes, what happens. So yeah, it's good fun. So the understudy effectively is there as a port of call. And it's not just one. There will be multiple understudies. So as you guys know, we've got myself, we have Glenn as second cover Marty. So there's always like first, second. Some shows have thirds in case there are scenarios in which people have to go on and do it. So yeah, it's a multitude of different factors taken in. And the other thing important to say is the question for Jessica, is that you don't just have one. So for example, as you guys know, I'll use Glenn as the example. Glenn is a cover Dave, but he is also a cover Marty. So not only does he have his own track, he then has to learn the Dave McFly track, but the Dave McFly track will also include the Asbestos Guy. It will also include everything that Dave McFly would do. And then a swing who covers multiple different people, they learn lots of different, like the so we've got our wonderful swings, Brian, Adam, Dylan and John, and they're the male swings, and they will learn the male ensemble tracks. So if somebody goes off, they just fit in. But if somebody steps up to their cover, step into the shoes of their cover, then they would then step into that, as well as having their own covers. So it is all logistically thought out. But yeah, so it is important to learn your lines of lyrics, basically, because if you go on, it's like, good.
Yeah. Mark Oxtoby also mentioned this Shook With Love, because obviously, you know, Mark has cover for Doc. We've all been there. Since you mentioned Manchester, I think that's a natural segue into the questions that we had about Manchester.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I think you've probably already touched on a couple, to be honest, in what you've already said. But we always like to talk about Manchester because we love hearing people's stories about their emotions that day and so on. So that first show on February the 20th, 2020, at the Manchester Opera House, finally seeing all that work come to fruition in front of an audience. How did that feel? How did that day go for you?
It was kind of wild. Like, it was just, I don't think anybody expected it to be what it was. I think we all, you know, like we're all sat there and we've been doing this rehearsal process for 4 or 5 weeks, and we've got John and Bob laughing at the jokes in the show. But we're like, what if nobody likes it? What if everybody like doesn't like the show? You know, what if we put it out there and it's out there for people to see and they go, that's not Back to the Future, we don't like it. You go, what are you gonna do, you know? So I think the weight of expectation from everyone was like, right, we don't know what's going to happen, but it's been a great journey to get here. Let's go out. Let's give it what we do well. We think we've got a good show. We think we've got something good here. Let's just go out and enjoy it and see what happens. And it just took off. And I'll never forget that feeling of finishing the show going, we did it. But also the feeling of acceptance and gratification from the people that love it most is something that, you know, I don't think we'll ever replicate, you know. And I must say, Back to the Future audiences in general, like, are amazing, you know. And it's some days where I think the best thing they did with it was put it in the Opera House. It was the Opera House.
Yeah.
So basically, the reason I think they've done it so well there is because in the space where we are at the moment at the Adelphi, which is very, very similar, people listen. In a big old barn, it feels like some of the dialogue, it might just get lost, you know, whereas our world is so big, but to keep it contained into a space where people really hone in and listen to it, which is why you don't need to have seen the film to enjoy it. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are certain shows where people are like, oh, well, I've seen it before, so I know the gist of the story and stuff like that. Some generations come now, like, that loved it from when they were younger. Their children may not have seen the film yet. This might be their first experience of it. And you don't necessarily have to have seen the show or seen the film to understand what happens. And I genuinely think that's due to the space that we have and the environment that we created. Like, the way that they've designed the stage to come out, the way that things are portrayed within the world of it, you step in, and as soon as you step through those doors, you're in that world. And I think they did that in Manchester as well, where you stepped into the Opera House and you were immediately put into Hill Valley, or you were put into Doc Brown's mind somewhere in the Plutonium Bar. You know, every single aspect of it, you are submerged within this immersive world. And I think that really resonates with people that have seen it and haven't seen it, because they're like, oh, this is a cool world to be in. Or people that do resonate with it and love it and have seen it go, this is literally everything I've ever thought it would be. Do you know what I mean? But the noise of the crowd that night, certain moments, yeah, it's really cool. It was so amazing.
And did you know how big the fandom was before?
No, not at all.
You didn't have any idea?
Not a clue. Because, like, for me, I liked Back to the Future and I liked the films. I thought they were cool, but it wasn't like, you know, because I think for me, because I was a bit, like, the films were out when I was born. So I kind of, like, didn't miss the hype of it, but I still remember watching them. But there were so many other things flying around. So I knew what it was. I really enjoyed it. But I had no idea the fandom. I had no idea people would go to the lengths of, like, you know, what everyone does. You know, like, it's remarkable. It's so cool.
You mentioned your Marty debut there in Manchester. I was there. Still got my ticket. Amazing. Ryan did ask about that, so I know you've touched on it a little bit. So you literally had 5 hours notice. Did you get a call, like, sit down kind of thing? And
we were in rehearsal, and I was upstairs in the dressing room in Manchester, and we were waiting to come down, because basically in previews what normally happens is we don't have I don't know if you guys have noticed from Manchester and from London, in the preview section there were no midweek matinees. And the midweek matinees weren't there so that we could rehearse, change, tweak things, do different bits and pieces. So we were called into the theatre. There was myself, Ollie Ormson. I think we were doing Good at Being Bad or something like that, the original number for Biff, for those eagle-eyed viewers that saw it. But I got a phone call saying, where are you? I was like, oh, I'm upstairs. They're like, could you come to the auditorium? And I was like, oh, maybe we're rehearsing somewhere else. I said, do you want me to let the boys know? And they're like, no, just you. And I was like, okay. And I said to them, I was like, lads, I think I'm going on. I'm not sure, but... And they're like, what? I was like, so I grabbed my script, went downstairs. And they're like, look, it's a weird circumstance. You've not had any rehearsal, but how do you feel about it? And I was like, well, look, as I said, I know me lines and me lyrics, so let's go. Let's give it a go, you know? So, yeah, it just kind of happened. It was a bit of a whirlwind, and I was like, yeah. I remember Hugh coming into me, and he was like, all good, going to do a Nando's order, what do you want? And I just looked at him, and apparently I just turned around, and I was like, a wrap? And he just left, and that was it. I didn't know anything else. He was like, okay, cool, see you in a minute. I was like, yeah, fine. But yeah, it was good. It was a quick turnaround, but it was great fun.
Oh, I feel very lucky that I got to see that. I'm like, oh my God, I've seen a cover while the show's in preview. This is amazing.
Mad. I mean, yeah, it was bonkers. It was really, really good fun. And I just think, like, again, everyone around that day, like every single person in that building was so supportive and wonderful. And it's just, they just get, you know, the casting team from that year, from Manchester to the short time that we had there to come into London, the people that came in, people that stayed. This year, the people that have come in, they just get the casting right. They always get, we always get like a family. It's so, it really is cool.
It's more important. And I think the support you get when you're in those situations, you know, we've heard so many times, obviously it's not just the person who's going on. It's everyone else who is then making sure that you're safe with all the automation, making sure your costumes are good and everyone else pulls together.
Yeah.
What a moment.
We have absolutely, without a doubt, and I'm biased to this, but we have the best stage management. Like, that they, you just feel so safe. Everybody in that building is there to, as you guys will see at some point, it's behind the scenes is as much as a mammoth as it is on stage. Like, when we are on, they do not stop. There's eyes on you all the time. Like, you know, we've got certain signals for certain things. If something doesn't happen, if there's something not safe, if there's anything like that, the main priority that we have been told from day one is our safety and us being okay to do the job that we love to do. And if you don't feel safe, and if you're not in that minute for, if you're, something's happened, it's fine. Do you know what I mean? Like that, and it is a proper safe place and a cool place to work. It really is.
Yeah, great. So we asked our members for questions. We've not done this with all our interviews. I think the last couple we did this for, but we know that you're such a popular guy across all of the audience that have been to watch.
I really appreciate it.
And so we asked if they have questions. And so we've got tons of questions that we'll get to. Okay. But one of the things that often comes up, and we've had some people that have been very analytical in this, is that you have such a busy track normally. When you're not Marty, you know, when you're Marty, you're on for the stage almost for the whole show.
Yeah.
When you're not Marty, you're on the stage almost for the whole show, but in completely different characters constantly. Hannah in our group thinks you make it look very easy, being all those. So, you know, credit is due there for sure. But have you ever had to do anything else that has been as physically demanding as this? Assuming it seems it's very physically demanding, but, you know, how does it
come? No, it really is. I mean, yeah, I'd say I don't think to this extent. Sometimes I've done a fair few where I just, you basically, the show starts and you run. Like, that's it. I'd say one of the physically demanding ones was I did a show in 2017. We did Our House, which is the Music of Madness. And that was mad. Like, that was your school kids, so the energy has to be high the whole time. But that, you just got, you're on stage, you're off, you're changing, you're on, you're off, you're on, you're off. Baggy trousers still to this day is one of the hardest routines I've ever had to do in my entire life. You don't stop. You come on and you would be in the next scene, me and my partner Billy, we'd have to come back on and we'd be pretending we're working at a garage, in like a car garage. And we'd have to put these big blue overalls on, like a car wash kind of thing. And you could see they started light blue. And within 5 seconds, they were dark. They were, you could wring them out. I've never sweated so much in my life. But that comes close to this. I'd say physically wise, Shrek was pretty tough, but from a costume point of view. So for example, I was fortunate enough to play Pinocchio. And I had like it was like, leotard and tights with like wood grains on. I had a lederhosen that was an all-in-one. I had a mechanical and a static nose that used to come over my head, and it used to sit like there and it would go round. I'd have a wig with magnets in and a hat. So you're, and there was, when we were dancing for Lord Farquaad in Duloc, in the Duloc number, you'd effectively be in this big plastic coat of armor with a big skirt. But if you wanted to look that way, you had to turn like it was doing a whole number like that. So physically demanding, I'd say that's pretty close. But this show, I think, yeah, it's it is physically, like, you don't stop. You don't stop. Like, you just go. And I think this year, I mean, it was great fun, but I'm pleased this year I'm not a goon. Like, I've actually got a break. And it's so nice to have a minute. Because, like, last year when I was getting to the Mondays, like, and doing all of it, I was like, oh, my God. I'm nearly there. It's the day off. You know, and again, I love doing that and it was great fun. But for the second year, it's been so lovely to have a small respite where you go, right, take a minute, take a breath, get yourself going again. But yeah, it's, I got a lot of costumes.
Yeah. Before we get on to all the member questions, since you touched on it there, obviously it was noted that slick that you were no longer being Slick, one of the goons. How did that come up? Like, was that just a discussion you had had with the...
That was a discussion that I had had for the second year. You know, and also, like, it was just keeping it fresh for, like, year two, like, something new, because I'd always done that. But I wanted to stay as Dave. I liked being Dave, you know. And if something had to give, I would have gone, like, just for the respite of it. You know, it's been great fun. And it was kind of fun, like, you know, finishing that journey with Shane as well. I was like, it feels like the right time to stop that bit now. So yeah, it was a discussion that we had and it was said, yeah, let's go for it. So, you know, I was like, cool.
Stephanie from our group was reading an interview with Nate, who was in the, I think he was a swing from Manchester, and he said he was covering the track that you used to. And he said it was originally named Visor, and was renamed. Is that correct?
Yeah. So originally he was Visor, but one of the things was it's weird because they've got names, but they don't ever get spoken to as said names. But 3D makes sense because he wears 3D glasses, and they didn't really want to put me in a poker visor. So, and I believe in the film, because there's three of them, one of them was, in the film, you've got 3D visor, but you have skinhead. And one of them's got no hair, I think.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to put a visor on me, but they didn't want to shave my head. So Slick was born.
Okay. Yeah, I think we always assumed that Slick was instead of skinhead. I think the other one in the film is Matchstick. Yeah, or Matchstick.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Well, that explains that.
Was visor, but then yeah, so we didn't. It would have been one of those poker visors, you know, the pictures with like the dogs when they're playing poker around the table, one of them on. So it would have been that, but we didn't have that.
Okay, so we'll try and get through as many as we can now. We're going to come on to a big section of our members' questions, so we'll try and do them a bit quick fire, if that's okay. So we'll start off with a question from Zoe, who's a big fan of yours. This is a bit niche, but what's Dave's office job? Do you know? She theorizes McDonald's head office or a fridge salesman. Because she thinks you're quite obsessed with the magnets on the fridge.
That is proper, like, eagle-eyed. Love that. Someone said it to me the other day. They were like, I loved what you did with the fridge. By the end of the show, I can't remember what I did with the fridge. So I was like, oh, yeah, I did do that. Yeah, I played with that magnet. Yeah, cool. So Dave, absolutely 100% at the beginning in the McDonald's is just... He flips burgers. That's all he does. He's in that outfit. He flips burgers and he gets fries and he thinks it's literally the best thing in the world. Like, it's amazing. At the end, we have had discussion. I think he is now head honcho of McDonald's. I think he's gone so far that it's now, it's his. He didn't come up with the idea, but he runs it. And he overlooks not just Hill Valley. He overlooks like that state's branches. Like that's where I think he is. The other 360 is, me and Glenn spoke about this once, I think he works at somewhere like Gucci. He's completely out of it because he's got a lovely suit on, he's got it all, it's completely tailored and it's as far away from that as possible. And the only reason we think that is due to the fact that, you know, there are certain things. When Linda comes back, she now has a fella. Yeah. In the first scenario, she's never had a fella. And I just think it's something that's so opposite of what he was doing. That's why, like, you know, little things like, and I think it's like a little nuance as well. I don't know if this has been spotted, but for me, it's always a thing that I've thought. When George comes back, in the first house, he's writing in a book for someone else. When he comes back, he's still written in a book, but it's for him. Do you know what I mean? There's like little tweaks that, like opposites that happen. So I think it's something that's so far removed. Dave's rogue. Dave is rogue. Like Dave does something else entirely.
Love it. Love that theory. Okay. Kate asked, what's your favorite character to play in your trap?
Normally, I would say, I like Sam. Sam's great.
I love for Sam.
Sam is awesome. Like, he's just a no-nonsense kind of gets home from work and it's like another kid at the tree. Oh, why? Like, he's kind of like, I think he loves his wife more than anything in the world, but everything else in life, it's kind of like, it's like, oh, God. You want me to do that? Okay, yes. Fine. Like, do you know what I mean? So he's just fun. And you have so much fun. And just before, what I love about that part in the show, it's the one part where he's not here anymore, but Roger. Roger is waiting to come on from Downstage Right. And it's the one chance where we have a little muck about. But it's any doc that's on. So it'd be like Gary, it would have been Mark. Yeah. You know, it would have been Matt when Matt did it, but I was on with Matt, so I didn't get to experience that little moment, you know. We're still waiting for Adam to do it. And, you know, when Corey's there and Gary's there, we always have like a little moment. It's like, ooh, do you know what I mean? So I think Sam definitely he's a fun guy to be.
Might be the same answer, but maybe not. What's your favourite costume of all the costumes you wear?
Favourite costume? Are we talking about Dave's track?
Whatever track, any track you do, that's from Lauren, by the way.
I've got two. So, I like, my favorite ensemble costume, I think, is Asbestos. I like it. It's a big, it's fun. It's nice. It's a joke. It is what it is. Like, I really like that. And I think as Marty, that's hard. I'd probably say prom.
Yeah.
I love the prom outfit. As well as the, like, the iconic one's great, but there's something about, and it's amazing wearing the puffer jacket and all the denim and stuff like that, and you get it, and you look at him and go, Marty. But I think the prom, for people that love it, notice how it's literally the same. And there's something about standing there with that, with Gibson, and you're playing the guitar. It's just such an iconic thing. That for me, I think, is the definitely my favourite Marty outfit.
Love it. Good answer. Vicky wanted to know, we've touched on this. Obviously, you have got a lot of costume changes in the show. So she's tried counting and lost count. Do you know how many costume changes you have? Sorry.
I have 11 during the show. So break through it really quickly. Opener into Dave. Dave into Asbestos. Asbestos into Gotta Start Somewhere. Gotta Start Somewhere into Sam. Sam into Future Boy. Future Boy into School Student. Student into Footballer, still in the same thing. 21st Century, Dance, Dave. Oh, it's 12. Dave, and then the very end.
That's the very end one that someone has referred to as the wish.com, Marty.
That one. But then last year, it would have been 15 or 16 because in between certain bits, so for example, after Asbestos, it was into a goon. Then it was goon into Gotta Start Somewhere. And then in Act Two, it was 21st Century into a goon, into the dance, back into the goon, into the dance, to the end. So yeah, there would have been another three. So it would have been about 15, 16.
That's crazy. Absolutely yeah. Crazy. But again, you make it look effortless, which is, you know,
on a day off like that.
Yeah. Catherine, we've had quite a few questions about this one, and a lot of people wanted to know about the fries, the actual physical fries. Are the fries fresh for every performance? Are they from the Mackies down on the Strand? Who goes and gets them?
Not from the McDonald's, but they are fresh every show. They're put in, they're actual fries. Originally, they wanted to go to McDonald's, but it's just too much. You can't run to McDonald's every day. And also, as much as I like fries, I don't want to eat McDonald's 8 times a week. Do you know what I mean? Even if it's a few fries, I was like, guys, we can't. And they were like, we can't keep running to McDonald's on the Strand. Like, you just can't do it. So they are fresh every day. They are done in the theatre, but they are some days hot. Some days they're a bit cold. Some days you're about to sing in Hello and you can't because you've got so much fry in your mouth. But yeah, it's they are fresh.
Okay. Lucy, what's your favourite memory with this cast? If there's a standout memory.
This cast, we've done a few bowling nights, which have been really good fun. They've been really good fun. I think opening it as well with a new bunch of people and getting used to seeing people that are not there. Oh, I tell you what we did there. We did a quiz the other week, which was really good fun. That was a really good fun night. And our Christmas party last year, that was really cool. Like, everyone to be together, have a nice time, enjoy it. And yeah. I'd say that.
Another one from Lucy. If you could play any other character in the show, who would you be? So except for your two tracks that you do.
Betty or Babs. 100%. Betty or Babs.
Would love to see that.
Yeah. We'll do a version one day. We'll flip it.
Brilliant. People always seem to be very obsessed about things going wrong. Obviously, it happens to the best of us in all of our careers, whatever we're doing. Is there any time you've had to like really improvise to cover something up that's gone awry?
In this show?
Yeah.
I don't... There's been a couple where there's been things that obviously go wrong, as you know, and you're very aware of that. I think it's... I think it's that thing of if there's going to be a show stop for whatever reason, technical, something happened, anything like that, you have to kind of think on your feet to go, am I going to say anything to, like, for example, you kind of make sure you're looking around, you're looking straight. If something's different, you go, what's happening? And then you can see someone saying, you know, either come off or we need to cut. And it's like, can I think of anything witty in the moment to say, oh, I've actually got to go off over here? Or, but no, I've never had to really stall as such. I think it would be more of a case of, you know, let's get you off safely, make sure we can get you off, and then we'll call it in that way. So I don't think I've ever had to really do anything to kind of keep it going and keep it going. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I know Corey was telling us about the hoverboard not working for one of his performances. So then you've just got to keep going.
It was unbelievable. It was one of the best things I've ever seen. Corey English doing fuetes in the middle of the stage. I'll never forget it.
So that was Rachel who asked that one. But Thomas just wanted to know what's the funniest thing that's gone wrong, either for you or someone else that you found hilarious.
There's too many. I mean, costumes in the wrong place. I remember one day, I don't know if you guys were in, it got a bit of traction on Twitter after from a few of the fans. It was quite funny. So I was on as Marty and Cameron was on as George. And just before the Power of Love, he forgot and pulled off my puffer jacket and my denim jacket. So I was stood on stage in a button-up shirt, sweating profusely, looking like I'd been dragged through a hedge backwards. So that was kind of fun. I think there's just certain things, like if the, you know, I think it's that age-old thing, if the car goes down and it gets stuck and then the fire goes, but it doesn't go, but the sound effect is going and it's, you know... But yeah, there's been some funny things that happen over there. There's too many to say. There really is.
Everyone's got their favourite. Francis wants to know, if you weren't an actor, what would you be doing now?
Definitely something involved in sport. I think I'd quite like to be like a commentator on different sports, which is so bizarre. Or presenting. Of some sort, of some form. Or I'd work for, like, I don't know, like, some animal study somewhere. Like Attenborough. I want to be his mate.
Okay. Michael, with a very serious question here. How long did it take you to grasp the challenging tenor vocals of Marty?
A fair while. It's one of those things with people's different ranges. So I'm quite fortunate that my voice naturally sits a bit. That's where, like, I feel comfortable with singing. But there's certain things like the stamina of it, singing it in, making sure you can look after yourself and getting to know your limits and where you can kind of sit. Because your voice, obviously, it's a muscle and it gets tired and it gets used and it gets tight. So there is things that you can do to look after it. But I'd say you kind of need to make sure that you're ready to go from day one, really, in the sense that anything can happen, so you just need to make sure that it's there. But I definitely will say that over the course of the last 2 years, definitely being in town and getting to do it as much as I have, like, the stamina is there, so you kind of, it feels like it's kind of sung in. I still obviously have to work to make sure that it's okay, and I have to make sure that I'm on top of it, and it's all in tune and it's not flat and it sounds okay, and you still do it within the realms of, you know, like, is my accent okay? Do I sound still like Marty when I'm singing? Are there certain things? And I think as a singer that I think we all say, like, you know, that there's certain things that you make sure, like, you know how to sing if you're not feeling 100% or you're not feeling something might have happened in the course of your day that you go, oh, that's happened, but okay, I'll put on a face and, you know, I'll get out there and do it and stuff like that. But you still know how much you have to give, or you know where you need to place things. You need to know how to do it safely, especially because the last thing you want to do is hurt yourself when you're singing it. So I think it's just a thing of repetition, but not over repetition, so you don't hurt yourself. And I just think it's knowing your boundaries and knowing where you can go and making sure that you're okay when doing it. So that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Hope that answers the question.
I think so, yeah. Cheryl has a technical question. She wants to know how much of the front projection you see from behind, like when you're in the car and it's traveling, what do you see like looking out?
I can see, especially at the end, you can see the majority of it, but obviously it's projected onto it, so you can see it from the back kind of thing. You can always see the rain, definitely, that always comes down. You can always see that. But 9 times out of 10, sounds really silly to say, but you're so focused on either, well, when you're in the cars, you're saving Doc, or you're going back to 1985. So you're so focused and you're so pinpointed on that that you don't really pay much attention to it. I notice the back wall more. Like, for example, when the Bluebird sign comes up, I'm like, oh, it's there. Let's handbrake turn and let's get it round. But you can see, like, when you're dead front, you can see flashing images. But also, I think being so close to it, you can't get, like, the whole concept of it, if that makes sense. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's how it is. So you can definitely see bits and pieces, but you don't get the whole thing as an image.
Just throwing this one in there, curious. Tony from the group, me, since you're on that subject. Obviously, you can't see the whole thing, but do you have any kind of sense of movement while you're in the car? Obviously, it's going very slowly in real terms, if moving at all. Is it playing with your mind, like that you're seeing like flashing images, or how does it feel?
It's a bit odd. Sometimes I've had it a couple of times where you do feel slightly travel sick, in the sense of, do you know what it feels like if you've ever been to Disneyland and you sit in that Star Tours thing, you know, the simulator thing where it's like things are moving around you, but you're kind of being thrown around. So you do move, and there are bits where the car moves, but it's obviously not at the speed in which it's done. Sometimes it is a bit odd where you look out, if you look too long to one side and you see everything going like that, and you're literally moving like that, it can be slightly disorientating, and you're like, whoa, hang on a minute, I got to shut my eyes or got to close it, you know? Because I think the other thing as well, sometimes that I definitely forget, it's not that I do anything specific, but you forget like how much people can see you in the car. Like it's lit up, you can see Martin driving. Do you know what I mean? It's mad. Like if I was to turn to the audience and wave, someone would wave back and you get to see it. It's that thing. I think that's the other thing with the gauze. You kind of sometimes forget that there are people there, because you can't, like, let's be real. When you come through the door and you say, Doc, when you take your glasses off, you can see the three levels. You can't see everyone's faces sometimes. Like in the front rows, you can see people where they are. For the first, I'd say like 5, 6, 7 rows, you can see where people are. And there are certain moments within the show, like when I'm in the cafe, the first time is Marty, when you sing about your dad being a total loser and you stand up and sing, you can literally see to the back of the dress circle. So you could pick people out. But when the gauze is in, and there are other times you're in that world and you're driving. If I was to be like, oh, you're good at having a conversation with someone, you forget that people can definitely see what you're doing. That makes sense.
Yeah. Last couple. Andy wants to know what it's like seeing other actors play Dave when you're playing Marty.
It's cool. It's really fun. It's just nice to see how other people do it. You know, it's really good fun. That's a funny moment. So last year, going back to the funny moment question, two moments. One, I forgot my lyrics, and I've sung Dave countless times, and Ollie and Hugh were sat next to me, and I went, Saudi satisfaction, saturated fat, and both of them just like went, I don't know, just literally everything just went out. I was like, what? And the other one was, I'd had a stint on as Marty. And I was looking at Dave or something. And he went, Dad's right, Marty. And I was like, how do you know, Marty? Yeah. You. Burgers. I just said burgers. I didn't know what was going on. I literally was...
Amazing.
So yeah, they're the two. They're funny moments, but that's it is fun seeing other people do it. Yes.
Yeah. I could imagine it must get messed up in your head if that's what you're usually doing, like, you know, 6 times a week or 7 times a week, and you see something else.
And then someone else come on, and you're like, oh, and it's funny as well because like there are certain scenarios in which certain people don't do other tracks as much as other people doing that track set. So for example, I've only done a few shows with John as Dave, because when I'm on holiday, Glenn plays Dave and then John would step into Glenn. But then if Glenn's on holiday, John would step in. So when I do it with John, it's like, oh, got your view. That's fun. Like, do you know what I mean? But it's kind of fun to play with someone new. Like in that sense, you go, oh, let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can muster up something that's a bit different to what we do elsewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Keeps it fresh.
Yeah.
Final question from people's in the group. James and Catherine both want to know, obviously, do you want fries with that?
Always. Always. What? Yes. Without a shadow of a doubt, fries make everything better.
Had to ask. Had to be in there. Yeah, so we'll start to wrap up now, Will. Final couple of questions. This actually is another member question from Zoe, who asked, what's been your favourite audience reaction from any stage of the show's history? Right from the beginning, future days, cast changes, everything. Can you recall your favourite audience reaction?
Yeah, I've got two. Opening night, definitely. Like our press night, our press night when it happened like for the first time, and obviously like opening night, first press night and stuff, it's been a fair few. Roger's last night was amazing. That was really special. That was something I'll never ever forget. That audience was wild, and you know, he's amazing. And yeah, so I think there's been a fair few. I don't think there's one specific one that's like amazing. Like the first Back to the Future day was really good fun. Yeah, there's been loads. There's been so many. But I'd say opening night, our first press night, first Back to the Future day, and Roger's final. They're like my four.
You're having four. Okay, that's fine. And we ask this in all our interviews, but if anyone hasn't seen the show yet, you're mad. But if they haven't, why would you recommend people come and see the show?
I would say that you should come and see the show in the sense of it's a fun family show. There is something for absolutely everyone. You don't need to have seen the film to come and see this show. I think it's got a lot of heart, and I think it's at the current moment where we are with life, with the world, with everything. I think it's the perfect anecdote for escapism. I think you come to our show, you are still within a real life world, but it's something that would take you entirely out of your day-to-day. You don't look at your phone. Like, what better way to escape the world? Don't look at your phone for a couple of hours. Come in here, see some really cool time travel stuff and see some really fun, beloved characters going on a journey all together with a bunch of people that are there watching the same as you. You know, everyone's there for the same thing. So I think it's just a really fun, good-hearted escapism show that you should come and see if you haven't.
Yeah, thanks, Will. Obviously, Back to the Future has been a huge part of your life for so long now. What would you want to do after this, whenever that may be?
To be honest, I don't really know. I just kind of take it as it comes, really. Like, it's been so much fun. I mean, first thing first, I need to get married. That's coming up, so we're going to do that at some point. But no, I just think, as I've said to you before, I'm so lucky I get to do this job where I get to play with different characters, get to be different people. So I think if it's a project that would interest me, that's something that I can sink my teeth into, that's got great, like a good story or a character that you can play stuff, I think there's the specifics of it, I think, is just seeing what comes around and going with that notion, other than going, I'd like to definitely just do that and just go with that. I just think you know, like when we started this, we didn't know that it was even going to happen. Like half the stuff that throughout your career, like there's stuff that's going to be happening next year that we don't even know about. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's just seeing what happens and just taking each day as it comes, really. That's where I feel like I would rather go with that avenue.
Yeah, sounds good. Obviously, the next big thing for Back to the Future, the musical, is the opening on Broadway in just a couple of weeks. We saw you recently performed at the US Travel Association's promoting Broadway. Do you think you'll make it across to go and see Hugh revive his role?
Definitely, yeah. I will absolutely be going to see Hugh and Raj over there. I can't wait to see the show. Like, I'm really excited to see it. And, you know, having been a part of it for so long, for it to, like, effectively, like, flagship over here, to then see it dispersing elsewhere and going to all these other places, like, especially like New York, and I think they announced the North American tour, I think they did as well at some point. So I think, you know, I just think it's a show that people are going to want to see and need to see. I think it's such a great show, but I will absolutely be going over the pond to see Raj and Hugh in the show. Like, I can't wait. Yeah. I really can't wait. And that's, I never got to see them do it, so I can't wait to see both of them do it. I was only stood next to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, brilliant. Well, that's it. Thanks so much for giving us all your time today.
You're welcome.
A great time. You've answered so many of our fans' questions. I'm sure everyone's been told. So all the best with your wedding plans. Hope that all goes well. And we'll see you back at the show very, very soon in a few weeks.
Very soon. Thank you so much for having me. And again, thank you everyone for like all your support. And it really does mean the world to us, you know, like, and I know that sometimes people have to dash at stage door, they have to run to get trains, they have to run home for families and stuff like that. So please know that everybody in the show really does appreciate all the support and love that you outpour towards us. It really is remarkable, and it does mean the world. So it would be nothing without you guys. So we really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. Take care. Bye.
Bye.